We're back on the Bengals Beat podcast. I'm Lindsay Patterson alongside Tyler Dragon, Charlie Goldsmith, and I'll break some news here right now. Charlie Goldsmith is coming from Red Spring Training. As we mentioned before, he'll have all that coverage on Cincinnati.com. How you guys doing?
Well, not as good as Charlie. He's in Arizona right now. How's Arizona going?
It's great. It's definitely a change of scenery. Some big differences are that like things like Starbucks and McDonald's have like walk up outside areas in addition to drive-thrus. The food's been great, even though I have gone to PF Chang's once or twice, just because that's a restaurant I really do enjoy. But had some new things as well, and I'm really enjoying, you know, just finally seeing some baseball. It's been great.
Well, did you have In-N-Out Burger? Because I hate to be that person, but when you're in Arizona or even on the West Coast, you got to check it out.
I love In-N-Out Burger. I've had it before. I've not had it yet, just because I don't want to be that guy who's always at In-N-Out Burger. You know, I'm trying not to come home 50 pounds overweight, and In-N-Out Burger every day can do that to you. So I'll let it happen organically. I haven't forced a trip to In-N-Out yet, but I will be going sometime when it's necessary.
Well, the good thing about In-N-Out is, you know, hamburgers, yes, they're unhealthy, but if you have to have a hamburger, In-N-Out hamburger has less calories than, say, if you went to McDonald's and got a Big Mac or Burger King. So don't feel bad if you go to In-N-Out 2, 3, 4, even 5 times while you're in Arizona.
Well, now I know. This is the in-depth analysis that we do on the Bengals Beat podcast. I appreciate it.
I think when you look at the wide receiver room, and we've talked about it plenty of times, with the number 5 pick, you still have free agency first, so to be determined on the route the Bengals take if they add another wide receiver in free agency early in the draft or later in the draft. But if you guys had to choose right now, who is the perfect pair when you think of the top 3 receivers right now in the first round?
Well, I think it's pretty obvious. It's his former teammate, Ja'Marr Chase. Those two were exceptional together in 2019 at LSU. Chase led all college football and over 1,700 receiving yards. He had 20 touchdowns on the way to a national championship for LSU. So I think it's pretty apparent that Ja'Marr Chase is the best fit for Joe Burrow at receiver. However, I will say don't sleep on Devontae Smith. He does have a slight frame, but he's a playmaker. He won the Heisman Trophy. We all know he can very good hands, excellent route runner. So he is going to be a first round pick receiver too. So along with Waddle. So it's going to be interesting to see where they fall. I will say, I do not believe the Bengals are going to draft a receiver with the number 5 pick. But if, you know, Penei Sewell was already selected within the top 4 and Ja'Marr Chase was on the board, Devontae Smith was on the board, I think the Bengals would more than likely select Ja'Marr Chase because of his chemistry that he's already shown with Joe Burrow.
So Ja'Marr Chase is second on my personal Bengals draft board in terms of how I would rank the best available options for them. Ranking behind Penei Sewell, I think regardless of what they do in free agency, their offensive line won't be good enough to where you can turn down a player like Penei Sewell, who in my opinion just grades out better than Ja'Marr Chase for reasons we can discuss later. But let's talk about Ja'Marr Chase and why I think so highly of him as well. And here's how I'll frame it. This might be the best free agent class of wide receivers ever. From Allen Robinson to Chris Godwin, Juju Smith-Schuster, Will Fuller, Kenny Galladay. Those are 5 basically number 1 type receivers by there. Even guys like Corey Davis, Curtis Samuel, Sammy Watkins, T.Y. Hilton, Nelson Agholor. So much depth and so much talent at free agent wide receiver class. Yet, for the Bengals, I think Ja'Marr Chase would be the best potential wide receiver they could realistically get this offseason. You know, while production-wise, talent-wise, at this moment, he's not at the caliber of Robinson or Godwin or probably even Juju Smith-Schuster, Fuller, or Galladay. When you draft a wide receiver at number 5 with the explosiveness, the suddenness, the hands and the contested catchability, that's a wide receiver with true number 1 upside.
will be coming at half, a third of the cost that a team will likely have to pay a Robinson or a Godwin or a Galladay in free agency. Throw in the fact that, one, Burrow has a pre-existing relationship with him, and two, that he's someone who will grow and age on the same timeline, in the same track as Joe Burrow, someone who can be the equivalent of Andy Dalton's AJ Green in terms of growing together and just being a consistent weapon throughout the entirety of their career in Cincinnati. Jamar Chase would be the ideal wide receiver should the Bengals add a significant one this offseason.
For me personally, I think when you look at the wide receiver group, it would have been helpful if Chase played in 2020 when it comes to the comparison game right now, when I just think of the top two receivers at number five. And I know, Tyler, what you mentioned before, obviously ideal pick is going offensive line with the number five pick. But if you look at free agency, I feel like you'll get a lot of questions answered where the Bengals go. They have a lot of holes and they have money to spend. Charlie has a good piece on that on Cincinnati.com right now. But I feel, I mean, it's really easy to go to your former teammate. The perfect fit is the reunion with Jamar Chase. Physical size and strength, his traits are just different. He's 6'2", 205. I think that reunion would be a lot of fun for the wide receiver room. And I think you can look at T. Higgins and Tyler Boyd. And I'm going to ask you guys this. Do the Bengals have a true number one receiver right now?
Yeah, I think it's Tyler Boyd. Even though he is a slot receiver, your slot receiver, you know, can be your number one receiving target. I mean, look at Julian Edelman with all those years with Tom Brady in New England. You can have a number one receiver who's in the slot. Tyler Boyd, he's hasn't been to a Pro Bowl yet, but I think he's on the cusp of earning his first Pro Bowl. He has 1,000-yard seasons under his belt. So, yeah, I think that Boyd is a number one receiver, and he will be, again, the Bengals' number one receiver next year, no matter who they get in free agency or the draft. And then also you have T. Higgins on the outside. At this point, I think he's going to be – well, he was the number two receiving target last year, even with A.J. Green, and I think he'll continue that into 2021.
Who cares? That's what I think. I think that there's no doubt that Tyler Boyd and T. Higgins can be number one type or even great number two wide receivers. But that doesn't and that shouldn't stop you from upgrading the position. One of my favorite pre-draft conversations this year is how much the San Francisco 49ers would benefit from drafting Kyle Pitts. And I agree, they would, even though they have Kittle. It's not a zero-sum game when it comes to wide receivers. I think that behind quarterback, an offensive line wide receiver is the next most important part of an offense. And if you have three of them on the field, like the Bengals almost always do, you have three great wide receivers. There's only positives that can bring to your team once you've addressed quarterback, which the Bengals have, and offensive line, which of course we all believe the Bengals should first. And because of the importance, I think, just offense in general and Joe Burrow's development has in the Bengals franchise and I think in their win-loss record for the 2021 season, I would have wide receiver maybe a tick below defensive line in terms of priorities, but still a priority nonetheless that, you know, you can't underestimate in addressing just because it's a third wide receiver. You're still the first starting at whatever number wide receiver you are.
We're under 3 weeks away from free agency starting. And Charlie actually brought up a good point in our group text message. He said, if free agency started today, the first three free agents you would go for. I'll have you guys go first. Tyler, go first.
I would shoot for the moon and try to call Brandon Sheriff, Pro Bowl guard. I would also, you know, gauge the interest of Joe Tooney. And this is going to be hard. It's a tie between Levante David and Leonard Williams. Now, I'm shooting for the moon. You said dream. So those four, I cheated. I added another one, would be the first calls. However, we do have to realize that Carl Lawson is a free agent too. So I believe the Bengals are going to place a call with him first as well, if not at the very top of their list, near the top, because we all know they need some pass rushing help. So if we're talking about, you know, new players, those are the players. But if we're talking about players who can sign back in Cincinnati, who are impending free agents, Carl Lawson will be at the top of the list.
Tyler, I was muted when you said Levante David, and so you couldn't hear me audibly say wow when you said that move, just because I personally, you know, haven't even heard us bring up the Bengals investing in one of the highest priced linebackers on the market. It's an interesting idea. But I'll stick to kind of the needs we've been discussing, offensive line and defensive line. The more research I've done into the offensive line free agent class, the more honestly underwhelmed I've been at the tackle position. I think Taylor Moten's great, and he'll be the number one player I'll list for this exercise. Yet it's starting to look, just based off reports out of Carolina, seemingly more likely that he might return there. And with Trent Williams likely to command a huge salary, and with myself not being as excited about, you know, Alejandro Villanueva and Darrell Williams and Russell Okung, as important as I think it is to get a tackle, I would then make my next call to Joe Tooney. I think at some point the drop off is steep enough to where you go to the best offensive lineman available. And I think that's Tooney over Scherff. And so I'd have Moten one, Tooney two, and then three. I do think interior defensive line is an important need for the Bengals to address. I would have Carl Lawson three, considering he's internal though. I'll turn to the inside interior defensive line, and I'll have it as a tie between Shelby Harris and Sheldon Rankins. I think both can bring a significant upgrade, both in the run game and in the pass game, and give DJ Reader a lot more to work with in the interior defensive line.
All right, I'm going externally, so I'm not even putting Carl Lawson, and I think they're going to move on from William Jackson III. We can get to debate to see if that's a good decision or not, but when I think of externally right now, I say Joe Tooney at number one, and you might have to overpay him a little bit. The Bengals do have money. They do have a lot of free agents, and they have a lot of holes. The problem is, and I sound like a broken record when I talk about the guard position, the Bengals haven't valued the guard position in the past. You can say all you want about bringing lower paid guards in free agency last year, or even Quentin Spain, to be determined on what they do, because they're going to need more than one long-term solution. But I think you bring back the hometown guy and you know, bring him in at guard and overpay just a tad bit at the guard position, because it's their weakest link at the offensive line. None of what I'm going to say is going to happen for the Bengals free agency. I'm not shooting to the moon, but just a tad under Tyler right now. Trent Williams, not a long-term solution, but you're going to have to overpay a little bit. I was in between there because I looked at the wide receiver class. I like the Curtis Samuel matchup in the wide receiver room. I know we had just talked about needing a number one receiver. It doesn't matter. I think he'd be a great addition, but I'll say right now, Joe Tooney, Trent Williams on the line at tackle, because then you can have some fun with that number five pick. You can draft down a little bit, or you can go wide receiver, because one of the top three wide receivers will be there at number five. So I think that could make it for a fun day one. This is definitely not going to happen, but I'm going to say Shaq Barrett. I think they're going to find a way to keep him in Tampa. Yes, the Bengals missed him round one, and that's really unfortunate. They could have signed him. He could be with the Cincinnati Bengals right now and be helping Carl Lawson. And I think you bring Carl Lawson, Shaq Barrett on the defensive line, that would be fun and scary for this defense going into 2021. But none of those things are going to happen. I don't see them bringing Trent Williams in, Shaq Barrett, Joe Tooney, but that is it, like a dream list externally for the Cincinnati Bengals, for me personally.
Yep. I mean, I don't think any of those things that I said are going to happen either. You said it was a dream list for the Bengals. And so I was shooting for the moon.
I think when you look at this offensive line, though, in 2021, look, Jonah Williams, he's doing okay. He's working out with his trainer in California, healing. No surgery was needed for his season-ending injury from 2020, so you're going to have him back to be determined. And look, we have months and months and months from training camp, OTAs, what the Bengals do in draft and free agency to determine where Jonah Williams will go. If they keep him at left tackle, if they move him to right tackle, guard position. Still a big question mark going forward. I feel like they're going to move on from Bobby Hart next year, so you got a right tackle opening. Trey Hopkins, he's going to be recovering from the ACL injury to be determined on his timeline and when he comes back. So Billy Price, more than likely, and I actually don't have a big problem with Billy Price at center. I know a lot of people look at that and they question it. I think Billy Price is obviously better at the center position than he is when he's out there playing guard. But you still got a lot of holes right now. So when you look at the offensive line going forward, who you plug it in as a free agent, if you're on draft day, because the good news for the Bengals, if they decide to go offensive line and maybe not at the number five pick and go a little bit later in the second round, it's a pretty loaded offensive line class in the first and second round. But if you were to look for Joe Burrow's offensive line protection in 2021, who's out there?
Well, this is another dream scenario question. So best case scenario for the Bengals is they spend some free agent money on Joe Tooney at guard, and they draft Penei Sewell, the tackle out of Oregon, with the number five pick. And then if I were a coach GM, my envision for the Bengals offensive line would be this: Penei Sewell at left tackle, Joe Tooney at left guard, Trey Hopkins at center, Xavier Suafilo at right guard, and Jonah Williams at right tackle. That would be the dream scenario. That would be on my vision board if I was the Bengals GM. And yet they don't have a GM, but if I was a GM. I don't think that's going to be the Bengals starting offensive line in week one, but that's what I would shoot for. That is the offensive line that I would hope I can get in free agency and through the draft and start out there week one. Joe Burrow would be very confident in that O-line. Joe Mixon would be confident in that O-line running behind them. That would be a tremendous upgrade, even though you still have some returning starters from last year and Trey Hopkins at center. He did, you know, serviceable at center. Xavier Suafilo was hurt for a large part of last year. I don't think he really got comfortable at guard, but he's a quality guard. I know you two aren't sold on him. I saw him a little bit in Dallas when I covered the Cowboys. He's not a star by any means, but he is a starting caliber guard. And Jonah Williams, I don't think he'll be thrilled about moving from left tackle to right tackle, but he's, a good character guy, and he would do it if it's for the betterment of the team. And then you have Penei Sewell out there, who by all accounts is going to be a stud at tackle. He's the consensus number one offensive lineman in the draft. And I think the Bengals would do themselves plenty of good if they draft him with the number five pick. I have him number five in every single one of the mock drafts that I've published thus far for a reason. And I think he will be available when the Bengals are on the clock with the number five pick.
I think Jonah Williams is a very good offensive lineman and will have a long, productive NFL career. I think if the Bengals do it right this season, this offseason, in my opinion, Jonah Williams will enter this season as the Bengals' third biggest investment on the offensive line, either adding two $10 million plus guys in free agency, or adding one like Tooney and using one and acquiring one with the number five pick in Penei Sewell if he's on the board. I think it's important to accomplish something in free agency so you're not dependent on Penei Sewell at tackle. On the other hand, I also think there's a legitimate chance that Rashawn Slater is better than, Russell Okung and Cam Robinson even next season. But if I'm predicting an offensive line from left to right, I do think that they get someone to tackle. I think that there are just too many opportunities for the Bengals to not take one, whether if it's Moten
or with an Okung Robinson, you know, that tier of player. And then with either Slater or Sewell at five. But again, I think it's crucial that the offensive line has several significantly new pieces. I was thinking about this today. What are the strengths of the Bengals going to be in 2021? What are they going to have? What position groups will they have that will be above league average? And quarterback, wide receiver, running back are all pretty much guaranteed to be in that category. But why not try to have a top 10 offensive line? You know, you don't have to settle for the 25th best offensive line, even though you might leave more holes elsewhere. If protecting Joe Burrow is your top priority, you're going to have to invest in it enough to where Jonah Williams is then your, I guess, third biggest investment at that position.
I think you look around the NFL and there are not a lot of teams that have strength and a lot of depth at every position on the offensive line. And it's not a fun pick at number five, but obviously we've been talking about the offensive line struggles for years now. I mean, you can still go back to 2015. And I feel like that was one of their best offensive lines and one of their best seasons in a really long time. And they've struggled since. So I think at the tackle room right now, you put Jonah Williams out there. Sewell, I think they're probably, no matter what, with the loaded draft class of offensive linemen in the first or second round, even if they decide to trade down, they are going to go tackle with that early pick. You'll probably bring back Quentin Spain and then Joe Tooney. That's when you have to, you know, you have to get out the checkbook and you have to overspend just a little bit because you're going to have other teams wanting him too when it comes to the guard position play. And at the moment, I still think they put Billy Price out there at center. I wouldn't be surprised if they decide during camp, obviously, and training camp, and just decide, hey, let's bring in some other centers and see how that works. But I can just see that the Billy Price and Joe Burrow, I felt like they did okay in the couple games that they were playing together. And then Frank Pollock, I think he's still going to be a difference maker, obviously. What they were able to do, what he was able to do when he was, I mean, even going back to the Dallas Cowboys and his 1 year with the Cincinnati Bengals, you get Joe Mixon out there as a playmaker. He's a run game coordinator. And I feel like he's still going to be a game changer as the offensive line coach going into 2021.
Oh, wait, you think Billy Price is going to start at center over
Trey Hopkins? I do, and I know it's not. Nope, everyone's going to hate that. They're going to hate it because I know how people feel about Billy Price. Look, I think it was a terrible pick when they made that selection in the NFL draft. But at this moment, I still think Billy Price is slightly okay at center until Trey Hopkins is back. I'm not saying that you don't bring in other guys, other bodies. Even if you look at some free agents out there and say, okay, let's bring him in as a center and just see how it goes during, they're more than likely going to have virtual, they're not going to have, you know, mini camp or OTAs at the moment. That could all change. So you're really going to be having that competition during training camp and to be determined on what preseason looks like. So at the moment, I still think the familiar faces, when you look at the offensive line, Jonah Williams in the tackle room, Quentin Spain at the guard position, and Billy Price. They should bring in other bodies and see how it works out during training camp and a few preseason games, even though Joe Burrow will not be playing in preseason. But I think you go with him as of now.
As your starting center.
For now, yeah.
Wow.
I know it's not an
idea. So you think he's better than Trey Hopkins?
No. Trey Hopkins is going to be playing. That was my point. Trey Hopkins.
Oh, okay. Well, a source did tell me Trey Hopkins will be fine by training camp.
Well, then that changes everything, Tyler. I don't believe it until I see it. When he comes back after his injury, of course, Trey Hopkins, and I apologize for that, but yes, he'll be the starting center until Trey Hopkins is back out there.
Okay.
But Trey Hopkins is ready to go. I'm just saying at the moment, you put Billy Price out there until Trey's ready.
Okay. I see what you're saying.
Shout out to Trey Hopkins real quickly for recovering from a reported ACL tear in 6 months, which sounds incredible. And I can't wait to hear his secrets of how he did it.
I know. I'm ready for that come July. And we'll go back to Burrow right now. And we had a piece on Cincinnati.com last week, the comparison, because no matter what, I know I got a few mentions and responses of people saying, well, can't we just enjoy both of the quarterbacks? Justin Herbert, rookie of the year, Joe Burrow, obviously his season ended earlier. But everyone loves the comparison game. And we were just talking about the top three receivers right now in the 2021 draft. When you look at Joe Burrow versus Justin Herbert right now, how do you guys compare it? And who do you have as the number one, not just after the 2020 season, obviously rookie of the year, it's easy to go with Justin Herbert. And most of the people we talked with went with Herbert, but I'm talking about long-term, you know, what you were able to see the traits from Joe Burrow in the short time during his rookie season to Justin Herbert long-term going forward in the next, you know, 2 to 5 years.
Well, I'm going to let you two answer this first, because I did answer this in our the story that you two actually published. So I'm interested in the perspectives that you two have, and then I'll answer last.
Charlie?
I can go first. it's funny. I was actually reiterating this debate last night, and it kind of came down to, what does Justin Herbert do better than Burrow right now? I think that there are two things. One, the deep ball, which I'll address in a second. And two, Herbert is better improvising safely, if that makes sense. When he tries to create plays out of the pocket, he wasn't putting himself in as much risk as Joe Burrow was. Joe Burrow, we often saw take big hits outside the pocket, even ones where Zach Taylor was telling him to get down. And Herbert just didn't have those moments last year. Now, what does Burrow do better than Herbert? I think that, you know, Joe Burrow's strength is assessing the game at the line of scrimmage and the intermediate passing game. The way he can use slot receivers, the way he can make plays outside the pocket. And so the question comes down to whose weaknesses can be corrected. And I do think with the Bengals making additions at receiver, specifically a downfield threat, and additions on the offensive line, Burrow will, one, be able to play out of more structure, and two, be able to also improvise more safely, since he'll have a bigger playmaker down the field if the Bengals do add that deep threat like we're expecting them to. So because I think personnel can kind of make up for some of what Joe Burrow doesn't do as well as Justin Herbert, and I don't think that there is as much that can be done to make Herbert that much better in the intermediate passing game, or that much better moving outside the pocket like we've seen from Joe Burrow. I think personnel can address some of Burrow's weaknesses, and I think Burrow's strengths, those are just innate and because of his competitive streak. And so because of that, I would narrowly take Joe Burrow.
I think right now it's obviously easy to go with Justin Herbert because you were able to see more games out of him in his rookie year. But if Joe Burrow gets a quality offensive line, the thing about Burrow, and we talked about it all of last season when he was out there, and even when he was injured and the Bengals, you know, season continued, and you looked at games and just how lost they felt offensively the next game after the injury, when Joe Burrow is out there, he makes everybody better. And you can say that about a lot of teams, because obviously the quarterback is the most important position on an NFL team. But I think just seeing what he's able to do, the different playmakers he would have out there, it didn't matter who was out there. And I know Drew Sample, a lot of people want to criticize that pick. I think he can really, you know, bring something out of Sample going forward in his NFL career. So at the moment, it's pretty hard for me, and I'm not even good at answering this question that I even brought up. I would go with Justin Herbert right now. It's really hard to go against the rookie of the year, but I think if you give Joe Burrow the pieces on the offensive line, he's going to continue to make this team better going forward. So Herbert has the edge right now, but Burrow is just right behind him.
So it's Charlie's on Burrow, and Lindsay, you're on Herbert right now.
Yes, sir.
Well, I'm pretty much going to reiterate what I said, you know, the story, what I think. I haven't changed my mind. Burrow is the more accurate passer, especially in the intermediate game, as Charlie said. He could read defenses better, and he has more pocket awareness. Where I disagree with Charlie is Herbert can get out the pocket too, and he is more mobile than Joe Burrow and faster. I think we all agree that he has a stronger arm. He can make every throw. So based on that skill set, being a better athlete and more mobile and having a stronger arm, I do believe that Herbert has the higher ceiling. However, Burrow, that's not a knock on him, because his ability to dissect defenses, especially at, you know, an early age, barely in NFL, one season, 10 games, his ability to read defenses even before it happens was uncanny. Best I've seen since Andrew Luck, his first year. So that's where Burrow has an advantage over Herbert, Tua Tagovailoa, his rookie class. But eventually, Herbert and Tua, they're going to get more experience and they're going to be able to read defenses, probably not as at the level of Joe Burrow, but they're going to advance in that area. Now, arm strength doesn't really advance. Athleticism doesn't really advance. So that's where I'm giving Herbert the edge and saying that he has a higher ceiling. But don't get me wrong, and I said this in the story, both the Bengals and the Chargers are extremely happy with the quarterbacks that they selected. And they know that they have a franchise quarterback in their hands. The Dolphins probably can't say that because they're in the Deshaun Watson sweepstakes right now, and they're calling Houston. So the Bengals and the Chargers, they're set at quarterback. We all know that Joe Burrow, he's working out now at Black Sheep Performance, trying to get his, you know, knee right for the regular season. And, you know, a lot's going to depend on if he's going to be able to bounce back and still be at the level that he was his rookie year. By all accounts, I've been hearing that he is, and he should be ready in somewhere in during the first portion of the season. Lindsay, don't tweet me out on that, but I have heard that. But to answer your question, Herbert, because he has the highest ceiling.
I think when you look around the NFL right now, and maybe it's just because we're ready for some NFL news, it's been a wild offseason already, and we're not even at minicamp or OTAs, and free agency has yet to hit. But the quarterback room, I mean, obviously, as I mentioned before, it's the most important position, and a lot of other teams can't say they're at where Justin Herbert, and obviously Joe Burrow, is coming off of his ACL injury. So to be determined on what he looks like when he's finally back out there, I think Joe Burrow has the football IQ. So I think he'll be just fine when he does return to the NFL football field in 2021. But you can't say that about other NFL teams right now. So the Bengals are lucky there. They got a lot of holes in other places, but they got their quarterback in Joe Burrow. And I kind of want to go to the NFL national story right now, because we hit on Deshaun Watson. We've talked about this before, and obviously Big Ben is going to come back. They're going to have to restructure his contract. But when you go to Deshaun Watson right now, I still feel like, and you know, you hear stories coming out of other NFL teams calling them and saying they're leaving voicemails, and Houston's pretty set on, hey, we're keeping Deshaun Watson. Is this just more leverage for Houston? Because I'm ready to see how this plays out.
Well, Houston has all the leverage. Deshaun Watson is under contract, and if he doesn't show up to, you know, mandatory activities, the Texans can start fining him. Now, it's not good for either party if you have a disgruntled player and reporting to camp and OTAs. And, you know, that's going to bring down the team and the entire organization, especially if it's a player of Deshaun Watson's caliber. Do I think he's going to get his wish? Probably. We've seen a lot of NFL players, especially quarterbacks, if they're disgruntled now, they kind of exercise their power and get their wish. But the Houston Texans, they're playing hardball right now, and rightfully so. When you have a quarterback like Deshaun Watson, pretty much a top five quarterback in the NFL, you want to hold on to him. But it's going to be, you know, fascinating to see how this story plays out. I can tell you now, from the people that I've talked to around NFL, Deshaun Watson is adamant and is bullish on not wanting to be in Houston anymore. He wants to change the scenery. He doesn't trust the front office of the organization, and he just wants a fresh start, and he has a wish list wish list of teams that he would prefer. And he has a no trade clause as well. So that's where his leverage is. You know, they can't ship him off to say the Oakland Raiders, because if that's not on his wish list of teams, he'll say, I have a no trade clause and I want to go here. And from what I have heard, I said Oakland Raiders, Las Vegas Raiders. I have to do 5 pushups for that. So what I have heard is his wish list is the New York Jets, the San Francisco 49ers, and the Miami Dolphins. Those are, you know, kind of his 3 teams. So we'll see. It's going to be interesting to see what happens.
I've been thinking about this in relationship to the Bengals, based off just front office structure. So the Texans changed coaches, changed their front office, yet Watson's perception and overall sentiment towards the franchise didn't change, mostly because of ownership, et cetera. And that just made me think about the Bengals and how they're structured as an organization. They're another franchise where they could change, I guess, de facto GM and coaching staffs, yet it would still be possible to have the same overall feelings towards the organization. You know, there have been former players who said, love Marvin, but there were other things about the organization that haven't changed since then that that impact the way they feel about the Bengals organization. You know, obviously, the Bengals don't have players asking out and citing ownership concerns and overall team structure concerns like we've seen with Deshaun Watson. But it's interesting, I think, just for a second to compare front offices and just front office structure in the NFL and look at what can change and what can't change. And then you look at the things that can't change and how can you ensure that those are as fully and well and as well perceived as possible.
Charlie, you mentioned front office, and there was a piece out earlier this week on Bengals.com, and it was from Elizabeth Blackburn, the daughter of Katie and Troy Blackburn, obviously works in the front office. And some things that we have seen, I mean, you can even go back to July, and I know a lot of people say it's been a long time coming. I know we talked about the potential Ring of Honor that could be coming to Cincinnati in 2021 to be determined. That's obviously not official right now from the Bengals side. But she wrote this piece and it talked about high standards and connecting. And one of the things I feel like the Bengals have struggled with in the past is really connecting with their fan base. And I know at the end of the day, all of that sounds great and fun, but fans just want to see wins on the field. And that is the most important thing. But even if you go back to free agency last season, where this team spent a lot of money, they can do that again in 3 weeks for the future of the team. But she brought up just connecting and how important it is to listen to the fan base. Do you guys feel like there is kind of a difference going on over at Paul Brown Stadium? But I know, like, at the end of the day, fans are, that doesn't matter to them. They want to see wins, but we're seeing it on the social media and front office side.
Yeah. You know, she brings kind of a young perspective, kind of progressive ideas. So you can kind of see it happening with social media and what they post online. Maybe a Ring of Honor, new uniforms. So I know she's had a hand in all that. And, you know, for fans, yes, at the end of the day, it's all about wins and losses and making the playoffs, getting a playoff win. But, you know, there are small things organizations can do to, you know, increase fan incitement, enjoyment, and just the experience. And that is, you know, social media. That's, you know, having a Ring of Honor maybe, so you can honor, you know, past players, and you can have something to feel proud of when you go to the stadium and look up, hey, there's Ken Anderson, and, you know, all the names. So they are doing positive steps. And, you know, they are forward thinking right now. And, you know, you have to give her credit for, you know, coming in and helping with those ideas. I won't say she's, you know, made every single idea, but I know Elizabeth has helped and, you know, has really started to make some changes a little bit in the organization?
So one of the headliners from the last week from the Bengals side has been the season ticket changes, specifically the introduction of the Canopy Crazies, which are the season ticket holders who are going to sit in the upper deck. And what was kind of surprising about that is not just the new name, Canopy Crazies, it's that I didn't even know personally, even though I'm from Cincinnati, that the upper deck at Paul Brown Stadium was called the Canopy. I just didn't know that. And I think that's an example of there not being as much just well-known features or characteristics of the Paul Brown Stadium environment. Maybe in 20, 30 years, Canopy Crazies are the place to be. Well, right now they're still building that, and there's nothing harder than building tradition. So you have to try new things. And, you know, with the new season ticket packages in particular, I'm really curious to see the impact that those have 10, 20 years from now, and whether these become things that are integrated into the Cincinnati lexicon. Because again, right now, Paul Brown Stadium, nothing, or there isn't much that has a name or that has a specific feel, probably with the exception of that pregame video with the tiger jumping through the flag. I've always found that cool. That very Bengals-esque and unique to the Bengals. So now they're working to create more of that. And I'm excited to see really what sticks around.
Can't end this podcast without doing your questions, Tyler. Go ahead and get to it.
Well, my questions are mostly for Charlie. So don't feel too left out, Lindsay, but you're involved in this too. So I know a lot of people that listen to this podcast are Reds fans. We talked about it earlier. Charlie, you are at Reds spring training. So can you give us maybe your top three, maybe five biggest takeaways so far of spring training?
Sorry, I had to unmute myself there. Yeah. So Kyle Farmer has been a takeaway. He's someone who 12 months ago was a catcher who in the last 12 months has become the leading candidate in the clubhouse to be their shortstop. It's funny because he used to be a catcher. He got to report to camp early with the catchers and got a head start. You know, breaking into the season, working on his new swing, stuff like that. Number two, biggest takeaway is Michael Lorenzen, just in general, is carrying himself differently. He's kind of working at a slower pace, building himself up to start. I know he's a fan favorite, and I think fans are going to love to see him use his elite athleticism this season. And then three, I'll kind of have fun with this one. An impromptu soccer game broke out among the minor league pitchers yesterday. And one of the top prospects, Nick Lodolo, he's got game. They started him off in the net, which was weird. It was a game of futsal, really. So it was, you know, all low to the ground stuff. Then they moved him to left mid. He does a spin move around a player. And then with his back foot flicks a pass, or with the back of his right foot flicks a kind of a through ball into the goal. It was a very impressive move and the kind of athleticism that I'm sure the Reds front office is very excited to see.
Okay.
Those are my three. I'll go with three.
Okay. Now, second question is for you. Have you had any time to do any leisure activities in Arizona?
Of course. I went to the Black Bear Diner yesterday, which was one of the recommendations I received. I got egg whites and smoked brisket, and it was one of the most delicious breakfasts I've ever had. I'll be back. And the menu is a newspaper. It's like the Black Bear Gazette or whatever, which is how they present their food, which as a print journalist was much appreciated. So thank you to the Black Bear Diner.
Lindsay, are you kind of jealous at this right now or what?
Yes, I'm jealous because every year I normally go to spring training with just some friends and we experience all that. I've been to that diner and as Charlie just mentioned, it is phenomenal. There's so many things. What's great about Goodyear and obviously a lot of people, if you've ever been there or you're looking, oh, what do you do in Goodyear besides go to baseball games? It's really close to Phoenix, drive away from Scottsdale. If you have any off time, Charlie, and I know you're getting all the recs from everyone, you have to go to Sedona. It's a little bit of a drive, but obviously what's great about Arizona, all the mountains and hiking, if you want to go do that and the different breweries, but the food is phenomenal. I'm jealous. I'll just answer that. I'm jealous I'm not in Arizona right now because it's amazing out there and you get two seasons in a day. So if you go for a run in the morning, it's freezing outside, but it feels great because the sun is starting to come out. Then you get that dry heat, as some would say, even though it's 90 or 100 degrees at times. Charlie, I have yet to check the temperature. What's it like there right now?
Well, it was 40 when I woke up this morning. Right now it's up to 48, so I'm still wearing a sweatshirt. And but then this afternoon we'll be up to 70 by lunchtime and sunny all week. And I'm living the dream, as they say.
I'm so jealous. 70 in February. Wow. Okay. I do have another question for both of you two. Now, this is a hypothetical one. You'll see. So who has a better chance of making the playoffs this year? The Reds or the Bengals?
I'll go first.
This is a phenomenal question. You go first, Lindsay.
It is a great question. It's a great question. There's so many factors. Obviously, health is a concern when you look at the Bengals side. And I could probably answer this a little bit better when we get close to regular season. But if I had to pick today, I still think the Reds are underrated. It's up and down when you look at the national rankings where a lot of people want to put the Reds in at the NL Central. Yes, they lost Trevor Bauer, but I still feel like they are an underrated squad going into 2021. And if they would have had, and yes, they got into the postseason last year, it was a disappointing out, but you would have had a full season last year with that roster, and they still have a lot of talented guys coming back. They would have probably gone even further because I felt like they started to hit it late in the season and everybody knows the streak they went on to get into the playoffs. And obviously it was expanded playoffs too, but I like the squad still. I feel like the talent is underrated what they're still bringing back in 2021. So I'll go the Cincinnati Reds.
The Reds will say they're like the same team they were last year, except without the Cy Young winner, of course. I'm on the record as predicting the Reds to go 81-81. And right now my record prediction for the Bengals would be 6-10 or 7-9. The biggest difference is that the Bengals arguably play in the best division in their sport. And the Reds arguably play in the second worst division in their sport. So if you're looking for a path to the postseason, well, the Reds won't have to play the equivalent of the Steelers, the Browns and the Ravens for what, six out of their 16 or 17 games. I can't do that percentage math, but trust me, the Reds will get plenty of opportunities against the Pittsburgh Pirates. And, you know, of course the Cubs and the Cardinals and the Brewers have upside, but they're not even close to the status that I think the Ravens and the Browns and even the Steelers are in. It's a mediocre division, so the Reds have a better shot to make the playoffs than the Bengals, but I'm not predicting that happens just because they have too many holes in the lineup, shortstop, not a catcher. I do believe they'll get better at catcher this year. Banking on some new pitchers, et cetera.
Wow. Okay.
That and Tyler, what do you think? Question. You think the Reds have a good chance to make the playoffs?
You're asking me a baseball question. That's the first time anybody has ever asked me a baseball question. I'll say this. The Dodgers are going to win the World Series again.
A homer almost. Homer. Trevor Bauer out there. And obviously the Dodgers, the rich keep getting richer when you look at the Los Angeles Dodgers right now. But yeah, right now it looks like postseason baseball could be coming back to Cincinnati for the Reds. I just don't see the Bengals going. And I can't look into the year following that because so much could happen in the next year and even free agency next year. So I'm not ready to determine when the Bengals will get back to postseason.
Well, the Bengals win a playoff game by the time you're 40.
I hope so. Well, Charlie's RV already brought it up. If they do not win a playoff game, you know, even do well in the playoffs under Joe Burrow's rookie contract, that would be brutal for Cincinnati and the Bengals. They've got to do something. I mean, I know the years are going to come by pretty quickly, but you got to do something. I'm just not ready to predict when they return to the playoffs right now.
Yeah. Okay.
On the podcast, we referenced the story on Blackburn on Cincinnati.com from Butch Hobson, and I loved the lead by Butch. She knows what it feels like for the Bengals to win a playoff game because everyone thought they had done it in 2016 against the Steelers. That's in my lifetime the closest the Bengals have been to winning a playoff game as well. So I just thought that was a funny and interesting way to start a story because I know a lot of Bengals fans can relate to that.
I want to go back to that moment because I remember being in the press box for that game and we were all just sitting in there and you guys have obviously all been in the press box with that group of people. And it was the same group of people. And we're like, I can't believe they're actually going to win a playoff game. They're going to beat the Steelers. That's crazy. And we're, everybody's thinking like, what are you going to ask? Who do you want to talk to when you get down to the locker room? And then for everything, I don't need to remind everybody how it all played out, but for everything, how it all played out, I remember that night. I don't think anybody left the press box because everyone was so busy with all of their stories. I remember sitting in the little cafeteria area and Dan Hoard came in and it's close to maybe 2 a.m. and he's just like, what happened? And we both just shook our head like, I cannot believe what just happened in Cincinnati. And I know a lot of fans feel the same way. Look, Cincinnati sports have had a lot of heartbreaks, but nothing will ever top that just experience seeing that from the locker room to watching how the game played out at Paul Brown Stadium. I'll definitely remember that one for a long time. But going forward,
quick tangent real quick. A funny moment kind of full circle was the Bengals, of course, had the shocking Monday Night Football win over Pittsburgh this season. And I sat next to Richard Skinner from Local 12 at the games during the year. And we're talking about how crazy it is the Bengals win. And I go, now, wait a second. The Bengals, I think, at the end of the game, were running out the clock. Had the ball in the 25-yard line. And I said, 5 years ago, they were in the exact same position, I believe, literally right there with the ball running out the clock. And we got a good laugh out of that. But at least in 2020, the Bengals did pull that one out.
Oh, it's one we're always going to remember from Monday Night Football to that Monday or that playoff collapse against the Pittsburgh Steelers. I know you guys have plenty on Cincinnati.com. As we mentioned, Charlie's doing double duty. He has you covered for all the Reds clips. You're really going to want to check out his stuff. He'll have you covered all season with Bobby Nightingale, but he's also still writing some Bengals stories. And Tyler, I know you have plenty on Cincinnati.com and more coming. What's up there, guys?
Yeah, I have a 3-round mock draft of the Bengals. So check that out. I kind of spoiled it a little bit with their number 5 pick. And I mentioned it earlier in the podcast. I went to Black Sheep Performance, the gym out in Blue Ash, and worked out with some of the trainers. And the reason why I went there is over 20 Bengals currently work out there, including Joe Burrow, Drew Sample works out there, Von Bell. So I got a NFL style workout, but also I have a story coming up just about the gym and why it's booming in popularity right now and such a hot spot for Bengals players.
I have kind of the first part of a free agency primer looking at the offensive side of the football, specifically the players the Bengals would be in position to spend their money on should they choose to sign a tackle or a guard or a wide receiver or a tight end, looking at the candidates that make the most sense and kind of elaborating and setting the scene heading into March. And then Reds coverage as well. I wrote the story about what it means for the Reds to have Joey Votto as a power hitter. I had a stats-focused story on why Eugenio Suarez might be the biggest X factor in all of baseball and how he plans to rebound from the worst year of his career. And just a lot more on Cincinnati.com. Feature on Tyler Stevenson. Updates on Nick Senzel, who Reds fans seem to be perplexed by at the moment, and just everything from out here in Goodyear.
Make sure you go check that out. Tyler, I want to bring this up really quick because you said you had an NFL style workout. You know, Frank Pollock likes to use a fullback. Are you trying to come back?
No, I'm too washed as an athlete. Maybe 5-10 years ago, I would think about, no, I'm just joking. No. I was much better at track and field and basketball than I was at football.
Make sure you go check out.
What about me, Lindsay?
Charlie, you could too. You know what, Charlie could be, Charlie, this is where I would put you on the football field right now. I think you could be just a sneaky, good punt returner, kick returner.
Charlie, I wouldn't advise that.
I did bring my glove out to spring training just in case. I'm here. If anyone needs to sign me. I'm old enough to be here. I'm right in my baseball prime age wise. So,
on the baseball field, you're a shortstop because that's what they need right now. So that's where I'm putting you on the baseball field right now.
I thought you were a tennis player, Charlie. You're switching sports.
No, I play both. I play both.
Oh, look at that athlete in Charlie. Okay.
Charlie's a double athlete. Make sure, again, you check out all of his work. He has Reds, Bengals. Tyler has a great piece coming up on Cincinnati.com. We're going to have the latest in free agency as we get closer to it. Cincinnati Inquirer, check it out over on Twitter, E&Q Sports. And thank you for listening to the Bengals Beat Podcast.